I'm Ellen Mary.
And I'm Michael Perry.
And he's a plant geek.
And she's a plant addict.
And this is the Plant-Based Podcast.
This is more than just a gardening podcast. We'll be exploring the world of plants from every possible angle. We'll be talking about plant-based diets, plant materials and fabrics, the well-being qualities of plants, and giving plenty of gardening tips and tricks.
So we'll be chatting worldwide to companies and individuals that are being creative with plants in new and exciting ways, from fabulous flower crowns to foliage-filled lounges,
botanical moisturizers to bamboo clothing.
It's all here.
And it's all made of plants.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at VeggiePod. Their integrated raised vegetable garden bed kit makes growing vegetables easy for everyone. With self-watering features and protective canopy, with VeggiePod, you'll be harvesting your own produce in no time. Available in three sizes to suit any garden. Visit veggiepod.co.uk and enter PBP10 for a special discount as a PBP subscriber.
So today we're in a really pretty cut flower garden down in Diss, just outside of Diss, and it's called Gabrielle's Garden. And we are amongst some beautiful eucalyptus and all kinds of lovely cut flowers. It's dahlia heaven and here with Gabrielle. So we are going to find out a little bit more, aren't we, about your garden and how it all started. And then later on in the podcast, we'll find out some tips and stuff for listeners to take away to grow their own cut flowers as well. Just to set the scene for listeners, we've had some lovely tea and coffee. We're sitting on some pallets. There's a wasp's nest close by, and there is a dog that's literally wrapped around our feet.
Can I just point out, it was nice coffee as well. When Gabrielle asked me if you want a cup of coffee, I said, is it instant? She said, no. I was like, phew. I'm a
it's
coffee
good
snob.
Coffee. We need coffee.
Michael is a coffee snob.
I didn't expect that in the middle of the South Norfolk countryside. Am I Norfolk or Suffolk? I'm not sure.
You're
actually
in Norfolk.
Okay, cool. This is Norfolk. Definitely Norfolk.
Getting a manner with that one.
But we've had lovely fennel tea and lovely coffee. I know we've established that now, which is great. There's some lovely greenhouses around, and it just looks like a really relaxed place to be, where you are amongst nature, aren't you?
Absolutely.
So tell us, Gabrielle, where did your love of flowers begin? Because I know the business is relatively new, but for you, like when you were a child, what memories do you have of flowers and how do you feel that inspired you in the present day?
I think there's all sorts of influences, actually. Mm-hmm. Some really young ones from when going for walks as a very young child and being at the height of certain sort of hedgerow flowers, mm-hmm. to being taken to Kew Gardens on sort of weekends when as a small child in London and seeing quite formal gardens, greenhouses. Uh-huh. And then moving out of London as a young teenager and into Suffolk in the wild.
Wow. Big change, huh?
Massive change. And being let loose, really. Yeah. And becoming slightly feral. And just going out and exploring and finding common lands and hedgerows.
Yeah.
And seeing the wild stuff and understanding and looking at it in detail and realising that the colours work together, the shapes, the textures. Mm-hmm. So I know that's sort of in there. And it was parked for a while. I've had my family, got involved in community stuff. And then as they gradually got older, can you hear the glider?
Yeah, we can hear the glider. It's okay.
It's a really synonymous sound with South Norfolk because it's a really popular gliding club.
Oh, beautiful.
So we often have it.
Just go back slightly. It's yet another plant lover on the podcast whose love of plants started when they were younger as a child and being allowed to be outside enjoying nature. Almost everyone we talk to has that link back to being a child, don't
they?
It's
really interesting, but obviously it didn't manifest for you straight away. What did you do when you left school? Was it very different to what you're doing now then?
Gosh, I did all sorts of things when I left school.
But
I've been a very
much
no, not at all. Absolutely, lots of different stuff. I've had a big family. I have four children, so a lot of my work revolved around children. Mm-hmm. Lots of creative workshops, lots of creative activities, lots of community stuff.
Okay.
And then when I left, the community project I was working with, a dad gave me a book on growing vegetables for profit and pleasure, made by an amazing woman who I can't actually remember the name of the book at the moment, well, the author. But it was a story about how a woman had set up her business and it was totally sort of sustainable and she was growing vegetables on a box scheme. And it kind of gave me ideas and I experimented with a salad business to start with, and I was growing salad leaves and edible flowers for about 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of just kind of migrated to more flowers, actually.
It just evolved.
It evolved. Yeah. Migrate, is that the right word?
Either way. Mm. Either way.
Sometimes things happen like that and you can't always trace back how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, I sold my salad to a couple of, you know, businesses who were just like, oh, can we have some of your flowers too? And then they'd say, actually, your flowers sell our business. Can we have more flowers? And being asked to put bouquets together of very seasonal flowers, very native flowers, and getting the feedback from that was just... was the sort of green light, really.
Mm-hmm. So when you made the kind of move, if you like, from salads and edibles to cut flowers, what was your vision? What was your vision for the business going forward? Where did that come from?
It came from a realisation that it was incredibly difficult to buy seasonal flowers.
Yeah.
So flowers of the moment. And actually, if you've got an occasion that's incredibly important or sentimental or emotional, like a wedding or a funeral, then actually those flowers really represent that moment in time. And then in the future and years to come, it becomes something that you recognise and it becomes a connection. And so it was really that kind of sparked it. And I could just see this garden before it was even started, really. And I wanted to be able to grow flowers that, you know, from March, February, March, through to the winter, and sort of note those seasonal changes and the colour palette and that sort of thing.
A lovely vision to have.
I think that's great. And I love the fact that this type of cut flowers, like British cut flowers, is then flowers that you've recognised, perhaps ones that have been grown in your parents' garden, your grandparents' flower patch when you were a kid. And I think that kind of like reminiscence, that kind of feeling is so nice. And that's why British cut flowers are very emotive for me in particular as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a little bit like fashion, there's trends and it changes. But actually, it's still pretty much fundamentally the same. We are growing flowers that market gardeners grew. Lovely old gentlemen grew for their ladies.
You can almost see them like on a wooden cart down an old street where they used to have them in the buckets, you know, that kind of lovely old feel.
Well, this area, I've met lots of people whose families were growers for Covent Garden. So iris growers, people who grew specific flowers to take down into London. And so I think it was quite traditional in this area for people to be doing that.
It must be a good soil. Have you found this good soil here?
I've got challenging soil. I have got quite challenging soil, but it's just I've gone through lots of processes in my growing and my learning about growing. I didn't study horticulture, so I've sort of had to figure out things. And the land I took on was a waste ground, so it was full of all sorts of rubbish and bits and pieces, and the land.
There were four houses knocked down here, you said earlier.
So it was. There were buildings here, and actually, you could tell where the vegetable gardens were. From sort of 50, 60, 70 years ago, because the soil structure is very different in different parts of the garden. So I bring in a huge amount of organic matter. I now sort of work on a very sort of no-dig, minimal-dig method, and actually that's really helped.
Yeah, really allowing the soil to do its best for you.
And then all that microbial stuff, all the insect life starts from the soil.
Yeah.
So if you look after that, then actually I think everything else follows.
That's right. So, you know, you've got a lot going on here. How you had this vision of what you wanted, and you just said that you could see the garden. How did you start it? Like, how did the journey begin?
Gosh.
I like the big questions. Yeah. Then I don't have to speak for so long.
I think I started with that thing where you grow annuals and you grow them for the summer and you cut them and then you're done.
Yeah.
So I started with farmers markets. So I probably was productive from June to September.
Okay.
And then I realised, of course, I needed my perennials and I needed foliage stock and I needed fantastic roses. And I gradually established those statement flowers.
Mm-hmm. I've seen the rose hot chocolate.
She's gorgeous.
So nice.
She's gorgeous. I've got over about, I think there's about 75 different varieties of roses in this garden.
Really?
And they have all got something rather special about them, whether they're really fragrant, whether their colour is just something extraordinary, or their form. And I grow for rosehips for the winter. So the idea is that I can use the things that I grow during the summer for the autumn and the winter too.
Yeah. Mm.
Now you've become obviously a fully fledged business. You've got some help here on the farm. Do we call it a flower farm? What?
I call it a garden.
Garden, yeah.
Escape room's garden. Flower garden. It's a garden. I'm only an acre.
Uh-huh.
And actually that, you know, when you're saying about where did you, you know, the inspiration, at the same time as sort of thinking about this, I heard an interview with, and I can't remember her name. Anyway, on Woman's Hour, and it was the beginning of the Flowers from the Farm movement, and she was talking about how we needed to reconnect and to relearn and rediscover British flowers. And that was back in 2012-13. And it reinforced my kind of, that vision, really, to hear somebody else talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes. It's been there all along, actually.
So, actually, Flowers from the Farm, then. Can you tell us a bit about that and how you are linked to Flowers from the Farm?
Yeah, sure. It was set up back, I think it was 2013. And the idea behind it was to create a network for growers, flower growers, flower grower florists, and florists to access British flowers. And it's taken a little while to get going, but now the profile's really good. You know, we're winning awards at Chelsea and Hampton Court, and I was at Sandringham a couple of weeks ago, actually. Feels like a couple of months.
Yeah.
And we have a fantastic display of British flowers that are sort of gathered together from the different growers around the country. What it does for me as a grower means I've got a network that I can tap into, so we can bulk buy extraordinary seeds, amazing plants, to give us that edge on sort of stock. And it also means that anybody around the country, if they want to buy British flowers, can go on that Flowers from the Farm website, look at the map, find out where they want to send flowers, go to the place, and they'll find a grower, florist, who will be able to deliver those flowers, which means the air miles have gone, the road miles are minimal, and you know you're going to get something seasonal.
I've actually seen some really remarkable displays by Flowers from the Farm at some of the shows. So it's really lovely to see those British-grown cut flowers, always so seasonal. My favourites were the peonies, so early summer. And so, you know, beautiful, beautiful displays. And so important, like you said, with the air miles and not bringing, like, buying flowers from the supermarket is never as lovely as...
They're never that they nice anyway. The roses don't have fragrance, the carnations don't have fragrance.
Exactly, they're not grown for that reason. Are they so
they're grown for a quick fix really,
and that's wildlife either.
They, you know, I'm not going to knock it too much because they serve a purpose, and actually that's what some people like, but
there's another way.
There is definitely another way. It's much more sustainable, and actually I think people get a lot more joy.
Yeah, I agree.
I guess the only thing that it doesn't help with is if you've forgotten someone's birthday and you need to buy some flowers quickly from a garage forecourt. That's the only time that those.
I don't know who does that anymore, Mr. Gee.
We are disappointed.
I was going to say, you've just owned us.
We are disappointed with you.
Well, if I deliver you a sad bunch of carnations, you'll know why.
Next time, you just go onto that website. Go onto that Flowers from the Farm website.
And of course, if you grow your own cut flowers, then you can take them yourself from your garden.
I tell you what, it doesn't take very much to put a little posy together.
I tell you, a few years ago, a friend of mine invited us for dinner round one of their friends' houses, and we didn't know each other, and I think the person who we were going to, Louise, bless you, if you listen to this, you know this story. Louise, we went to Louise's house, and I think she was a little bit nervous, perhaps, or she was unsure of us. We were new, you know, okay. part of a new friendship group, if you like.
Yeah. Friend, cooking dinner.
Yeah, I mean, cooking dinner for us. It's like a bit, you know, it's quite a big thing. And I thought, well, what can I do? You know, I can go and buy flowers, but I don't want to do that. So I picked loads of herbs and made a bouquet out of the herbs.
That
and some
is
were
full.
Yeah, some were wow. in flower, nice. Some weren't. And then I wrapped them in some silver foil and put a ribbon around them, and that was what I took to her. Mm. And she said that when I gave her those, she knew that I must be all right. All was well in the world.
That just reminded me of something that I'd completely forgotten about. Wrapping in silver foil. You know, growing up, church-going family, we... You know, Mother's Day. Yeah. Mother's Day posies were literally a daffodil, a kind of grape hyacinth, a little something, an ivy leaf and a whatever, primrose, wrapped in tin foil.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was the most simplest thing, but it was just
so
the best.
Beautiful. You know, so easy, so beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's right. And I think definitely in part two, we'll find out more that the definition of a cut flower is not always what you think. There's actually many things in the garden that can be used as cut flowers, whether they're shrubs or perhaps even, you know, weeds that you forage. So join us for part two and we will discover more about what you guys can do at home and in your local area.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at VeggiePod. Their integrated raised vegetable garden bed kit makes growing vegetables easy for everyone.
So we're back here with Gabrielle from Gabrielle's Garden, who's currently munching on a tomato. So we started recording as she's got a mouthful, basically.
It's because we're working here with a photographer today, and she actually brought us, as a gift, a popcorn box full of tomatoes. So they're popcorn tomatoes.
And they are really
tasty.
I smell
a new marketing point there.
Yeah, it was
so
very
delicious.
Clever. And it all matches as well. Like, the popcorn tub is red, the tomatoes are red, it all looks very nice. That had to come from a photographer, huh? All that creativity. Anyway... Going back to the podcast, in part one we chatted about how Gabrielle's garden came about and your vision and, you know, how lovely it is to grow your own and flowers from the farm. But now what we'd really like to find out is some information so that listeners can take away with them, you know, about cut flowers and what they can do at home, maybe even how to keep them going longer in the vase, that kind of thing. So what are your tips for starting to grow cut flowers at home?
I always think you have to grow what you can manage, actually. So sometimes we're a bit ambitious and we'll try and grow lots and lots of different things and it's quite difficult to manage. So I would always start small and grow the things that are a dead cert, like your annuals.
Yeah.
And they are fab.
Things like Nigella.
All of those. Yep, Nigellas, cornflowers, larkspurs,
cosmos.
Absolutely. Poppies.
I grew candy tuft this year.
Did you?
Oh, nice.
I've never grown that before. But it germinated super quick and it flowered super quick.
Absolutely. And they will give you colour, they'll give you flowers, and if you keep cutting them across the summer, they'll keep flowering. And they'll give you that little bit of, not a little, a lot.
Do you direct sow annuals? What's your preference?
I find it too risky because it's a business and I really need to know what I've got and what I'm going to be planting. So I tend to use root trainers, which if you're not familiar, they're very long.
Like modules.
And what they do is they allow the plant to have a really good root structure, which quite often if you're growing in a seed tray, you're having to pull plants apart when you're potting them on and it damages their roots. So root trainers are great. And I use a thing called soil blockers, actually.
Okay. I've seen those.
Soil blocker.
Explain those to us.
So some brilliant inventor, who I think is still with us, which I hope he is, Ladbrokes. Yeah, Mr. Ladbroke. I think, he did it in order to sort of achieve a similar thing as the root trainer. So a soil blocker enables you to make blocks of compost which have a little tiny indentation at the top and you pop your seed in that little indentation. Mm-hmm. And it sort of is almost 100% guaranteed germination if the seed is good because it's completely protected. The soil that you're using to create the block is damp, so there's a water source there for that seed and there's nutrients in the compost and the seed will germinate and the roots will come and they'll go out to the edge of the block, but because the air is there, they turn back in on themselves mm-hmm. and carry on growing. So there's no pulling them apart, and it means you can plant direct your block into the ground.
When you have the seedling?
When you have the seedling. When it's hardened off, yep, you've grown your seedling, you've popped it out to harden off, you can then plant that directly, which cuts out the need for plastic pots.
Yeah.
So actually...
And that's so important right now, isn't it?
Yeah, and if you use a blocker or a root trainer, you know what you've got. You know, you could grow half a dozen different varieties in one seed tray. Mm. Good tips. Good tips. Good tips.
But what I love is you don't even need to assign like a cut flower garden, because actually, even in a standard garden, there might be shrubs that have decorative foliage. There might be flowers you've already got there. So I think I would encourage people just to look around their garden and anything like there's no rules when it comes to cut flowers, is there?
There's no rules. We've been cutting flowers and arranging flowers for centuries. And, you know, from little bunches of herbs to hedgerow flowers to what's in your garden. And I think there are shrubs all through the year, 12 months of the year, that will offer berries, flowers, colour, shape, form,
like
fragrance.
Like the hypericum that you've got over there, you
absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely. And I think of the winter months, and I think of all the viburnums, which are just beautiful, that lovely winter honeysuckle.
Yeah, lovely.
So
there's so many options.
And actually all of those plants are really fantastic for wildlife. Mm-hmm. So it was a little thing, you know, I learnt later, because actually the land I grow on wasn't secure and I was never sure whether I'd have it the next year. But it is secure now, and I've put in a huge amount of foliage plants now, and they all offer stuff for the floristry,
of
but also
when you're creating like a bouquet or something,
you need that.
You need
the greenery.
Kind of, absolutely.
Yeah.
My allotment. So I have a cut flower patch on the allotment.
Yeah.
And I'm glad there are no rules, because there's definitely no rules down there.
Yeah.
It's just as and when, if there's a space, I'll sow something,
absolutely.
Or if I like something, I put it in. But I've got a lot of annuals, because on the allotment it's really easy. Then you know, you clear it away because you're not there really over the winter time. You know, it's all done until next year. But I have things like cosmos and sunflowers and all the traditional stuff, zinnias, the nigella, which I just totally and utterly
love. Beautiful. You have the fantastic seed heads. But then I'd say, you know, if you've done that for a year or so, put in a rose. Put in some
bulbs.
I've got some roses. I've got tequila sunrise.
Oh, have you?
Yeah. Blue for you and St. Ethelberger.
Latter two, absolutely gorgeous. Sweet Juliet.
It's a bit chav, Ellen.
who invited you?
I'm just.
I got it for that reason. I actually got it because of the name. I just thought Tequila Sunrise sounded really amazing. But another one that's really popular at the moment, of course, is the dahlia.
Absolutely.
And I've got quite a lot of dahlias. They've not done very well this year, but you've got loads of dahlias here, haven't you? Are they as popular as it were, like out in bouquets and in floristry, as they are on Instagram?
I think they are. I like to mix them with other things. I think that's the trick. Otherwise, you can get a little bit into the kind of five big dahlias in a bunch type thing. And I think if you're putting them into a bouquet, foliage, fillers, grasses. At this time of year, the zinnias are just coming in, and there's lots of perennial flowers that help soften the big, bold shapes, actually. Mm-hmm. I do love a dahlia. I didn't like dahlias to start with. But I've got them.
I'm sorry.
But do you know what I love about them is that they start to flower in July and they will flower until the first frost.
Yeah,
they're extraordinary. They will keep on flowering and they're just amazing. So they become a real stalwart of the cut flower industry.
And I'm not, you know, definitely no trendsetter, but I've been growing dahlias for absolutely so many years before it got trendy. Get me. But I'm just so pleased that it has caught on, because they do provide so much colour right up until November.
Absolutely.
You know, some of them will last so long, and there's
so many varieties and so many colours that you
and
could just
pretty easy to grow.
Pick out five tubers of different colours, shapes, you know, and that would be great to pop in as well, and then you start to kind of extend that annual flowers into something else, and you can then
and don't you leave your dahlias in the ground sometimes as well?
First year.
How did it go?
I'm feeling good. Yeah? I'm feeling pleased about it, actually. Because I think, actually, where our flower season is now much longer. I don't think winter really starts, or cold, wet autumn starts until November, and so the flower season really goes up until the end. And it's quite tricky for me because I do a lot of Christmas stuff to actually get them out of the ground, and there's over 150 tubers in the dahlia patch. And I did it for 5 years, digging them up, storing them, losing the odd one, kind of worrying about them when it was frosty, trying to keep them covered up. And actually, I've sort of run out of time now, and I left them in and I mulched them. And I actually think that's the key. Leave them in and give them
a good mulch.
It's like putting a little blanket on. And they came back really strong, really healthy. And
I'm not lifting mine. Mine don't lift.
I would say, actually, I'd say a good 90.
Well,
I would say that. And I'd say when I lifted them, I would always lose 20%.
Cool.
Quite a high, well, maybe not, 15, 20%. Okay. And always the ones you love.
Basically, if you give them a good mulch rather than lifting them, you're still on for about the same amount that you would have anyway if you'd lifted them.
I suppose the only disadvantage is if you want to take cuttings and get those cuttings growing.
Yeah, but you could lift
You could lift the ones that you wanted to take cuttings from and propagate and keep them.
I wonder if it's anything to do with our warmer winter, though, because, you know, in years gone by, our winters were so cold that they had to be lifted.
But then, I think when it's so cold, you know, we had a couple of years back, we had about a 2-3 week period of minus sort of sixes.
Yeah.
And that was quite tricky to keep them all warm enough. So I actually think they're better off in the ground. Ground temperatures, you might have frost on the top, but actually to really get down 6 inches.
It's got to be something really heavy.
Okay.
How about, I want to touch on just growing sustainably, because you talked about using soil blockers, so you're growing potless almost, but you're also making your own compost here as well, aren't you? And there's quite a factory going on,
a
compost factory.
It's a system, and it's really exciting, actually. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, just wonder through that.
Well, I use a lot of mulch and I buy in a lot of mulch, and that tends to come on a tractor and trailer, and so therefore, and local, so that's pretty good. And that's what I use for my no dig and keeping my beds in good health. But when it comes to sowing, potting on, planting out, I'm buying in bagged compost, and it's just every single element of it is becoming less and less sustainable. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying very hard to produce enough to use for myself. And actually, as a garden, just under an acre, it produces vast amounts of green waste. So I've invested in a shredder, and I chop everything up into tiny pieces. And I've got a wonderful barrel that is sort of keeps it all aerobic and microbial, and it's fast. So instead of having, I used to have those heaps at the bottom of the garden that sat there for a couple of years, and I'd maybe get a third of, you know, the bottom that was useful. Now it's all about creating very useful stuff all the time. So I'm using a combination of dry twiggy stuff, green twiggy stuff, grass cuttings, flower studio waste, household vegetable waste, and good old chicken muck.
Right, and that means
from my chickens.
That's the best way, isn't it, to try and be completely self-sufficient. Like, you don't have to buy in stuff.
Well, it's just incredible how much life there is in that soil.
Yeah.
So when you open a bag of compost, it's really sterile, and there is no life. Okay, it might have a bit of nutrient in there, so it's going to keep your plant alive for 6 weeks, maybe, feeding it. But after that, it's nothing. It's dead. And actually, where it's been extracted from is a really important site that's holding in a huge amount of carbon, and you're transporting soil around the country in plastic bags. So
such a good point with that.
Yeah, very.
And I think we can all do it, because we've all, you know, to lesser or greater degrees, got something. You know, we all produce waste, and I think it's the way forward.
I mean, it's that, you know.
I am experimenting. This is really new. It only started this year.
Yeah.
I have got the Norfolk Master Composters on board, who have been brilliant with advice and helping, and we're having compost drop-in days. So people are coming with their ideas, and I think it's just a really interesting thing. that's going on.
It is. It's really cool. It's good to do that. I'm just thinking, like, you've got an acre here.
Yeah.
You've got, obviously, a lot of space for your composting and a lot of space to grow your cut flowers. You know, not everybody has that amount of room. So kind of what sort of space do you need? Can you start small?
I think you can start, you know, I was talking to somebody and they live in an apartment in a flat and they've got a balcony.
Yeah.
And I, you know, there are these fantastic bins now that you can get. I can't remember the name. I want to say...
Fantastic bins.
Fantastic bins. Let's call them a fantastic bin. Anyway, they look like a very small dustbin, and you can put your food waste into them, and you sprinkle some bran, like stuff, on top, and it starts to compost.
Okay.
And it produces a fantastic plant, liquid plant food, and once that bin is full, you have two on the go, and then you can use that to top up your plants on your balcony. So that's on a really small scale.
So you can compost on a small scale, you can grow cut flowers on a small scale, because if you've got pots or containers on a balcony, you can still grow plenty, especially annuals.
Absolutely, and I think you're right about the herbs. You know, herbs are fantastic.
Perfect,
absolutely. Oregano flowers, dill flowers, beautiful.
So pretty.
Absolutely.
I think mint flowers and hoverflies, of course.
I use
mint
a
flowers.
Lot of mint, actually.
Yeah. So encouraging wildlife,
soft.
Of course, is super important as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How about longevity? Because, like, which cut flowers that you grow here, which last the longest in a vase and which have the shortest life? Because when I was a kid, I always remember, like, picking posies of flowers, and they never seemed to last, like, more than an hour. But I don't know if I was picking them wrong, or did I have to treat the stems? Because I remember my grandparents used to bash the stems of chrysanthemums.
Yeah.
So obviously bigger stems need to draw the water up, and, like, putting a pin in a tulip helps as well. So how do we get the most out of our cut flowers?
I just need to note that it's getting really windy. So if you can hear it, like, whirling around.
We're surrounded.
I haven't had beans for breakfast.
No, we're surrounded by oak trees and a large hedge. I think that picking the posy and it wilting is a really common thing. And I think that's actually become a bit of a, you know, ooh, British flowers, do they keep? Do they last? And actually, I think the problem with that was I used to do it myself too. You'd go out for a walk, you'd pick a few bits, they'd be beautiful, they'd be in your hot hand for half an hour. You'd get them home and you'd pop them in some water and stick them on the windowsill in the sunlight and they'd be all floppy. And actually, flowers need a really good drink, and they need to be somewhere nice and cool. And actually, so if you cut flowers for vases, it's, you know, for as a cut flower, you have to get them in water as soon as possible. And that's the thing, and they need to have a lovely long drink before you then do your arranging. So keep them somewhere cool 6 to 8 hours overnight, and then bring them into the house and put them in a vase and even snip their ends so that those stems can drink some more. So I think it's all about the conditioning.
There's so many different varieties of plants and there's so many different displays that you can make.
Yeah.
But what about dried flowers? Because when we went into your little studio, you've got all these amazing dried flowers and seed heads. You know, how do we go about doing that?
Absolutely. Well, I think actually when you start to grow flowers, you start to realise that when they go over, they produce a seed head.
And some look absolutely
and
stunning,
some of them are amazing. You talked about Nigella, which is fantastic. There's a wonderful Scabious stellata, which is another one, Ping Pong, which makes great shape. And there's poppy heads. There's all sorts of things. But, you know, I grow sea lavender, Linonium, which is a wonderful flower when it's fresh, but it also dries really well. All the Eryngians will dry and keep their colour.
Yeah.
Straw flowers, good old helichrysons. We talk about trends. They're very, very fashionable now. And they're a beautiful fresh cut flower and they dry.
How do
amazing.
You dry them? What do you do? What's the best
thing? Oh, now there was a real kind of debate about this. And, you know, this is one of my other early experiences that I've just remembered. My first job was on a flower farm when I was 12 and I cut helichrysons. And I think we were paid half a pence for 15 heads, which is like madness. I am quite old. But as a 12-year-old, going home with my £1.67, that's cool. And then you used to cut them. They used to go into the shed and they would wire them immediately and hang them upside down, wired. And that's a pretty good way of keeping them if you're going to use them for floristry later on in the year. But I tend to just bunch them and hang them upside down because actually I want to use them in wreaths, I want to use them in all sorts of different things. So if I needed to, I could wire them later. Okay. And actually, I haven't got the time.
Okay, that's yeah, and that's a good tip. Not everyone can sit around wiring stems of plants.
No.
It's just too much.
And so.
I haven't got time for that.
No. And actually, they look gorgeous hanging upside down. Most things like to dry upside down.
Okay, so upside down.
Upside down.
Dry your flowers upside down. You like to dry upside down.
That is an image I really
like. Oh, I know. So I think we covered a lot of tips for people at home. We've covered fresh flowers, how to get the best out of them. We've covered how to dry your own flowers too. Any other kind of wise words of advice for any budding cut flower growers or somebody just wanting to cut blooms from their own outside?
Absolutely. Well, I've got this thing in this garden. You wander around it, you know, there's a huge amount of what we might call weeds, but I don't use that terminology anymore.
Me neither.
The weed is out and the wildflower is in, because actually, go back 100 years and they wouldn't have been called weeds.
No.
They would have been wildflowers, plants,
and actually very
hedgerow.
Useful. They have medicinal properties.
They're
wildlife
all
love them.
Beautiful, and we need them.
Yeah.
So I would say there's lots in this garden, wildflowers that I use, and when you look at your garden, you might go, oh my goodness, it might be, you know, you might feel like it's a mess, it needs tidying up. And I would say, actually, just go steady on that, actually, because I think there's lots of very beautiful things.
Also brings in loads of beneficial insects, which you need in order to
absolutely
grow your lovely cut flowers as well.
Absolutely. So and also, yeah, totally.
It's part of the whole process.
It is. And that's what I think we need to start seeing it as.
Actually. So nice and relaxed, cut flower growing.
Yeah, yeah.
Have a wild garden.
And I do I do try and whip them out before they've gone to seed to just try and minimise any takeover.
Yeah, absolutely.
I use them as mulch. I use a lot of weeds in the early part of the year to keep my soil covered.
So we won't call them weeds. We'll call them wildflowers. So I think we need to make a new name up in the horticultural world for what we would class as weeds.
Spray my wildflowers.
No, you wouldn't. Well, I think that's...
Well, you might.
So, you might. No, you wouldn't.
No,
no.
No, you wouldn't.
I think it's really enlightening, and it's made me even more enthusiastic myself about growing some more cut flowers on my plot.
Yeah.
I mean, I only have so much room to do it, but it's definitely expanded my mind about what I might like to grow for next year as well and ways of doing that. So, you know, I hope listeners at home have got some really useful information, you know, because growing cut flowers is really satisfying. There's nothing like going to your plot or into your garden, cutting a few flowers, giving them to family or friends, you know.
And seeing what insects are visiting.
And enjoying the insects, and the wildlife.
That's part of it as well, actually, in this garden.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's been lovely sitting here, and I can smell manure. I can smell something manure-y like. Oh, sorry, it's Michael. Oh, is it you, Michael?
I've been working out some words of wisdom in my head. I'm going to give you a closer on this, right?
Oh.
It might not be about growing your own cut flowers, but it might be about cutting the flowers you already have.
Oh.
Is that nice?
That's nice.
I'm going to put that on a plaque, and we'll put it up in your shed.
You're good. Okay. You're good. You're good.
Okay, so gossip.
What do you want to gossip about?
I don't know.
We have just, you know, it's been all about cut flowers.
Mm.
So have you got any memories of cut flowers from when you were younger?
Got amnesia like Harold on Neighbours.
Oh my goodness. Interestingly,
loads of memories.
You have just told us that you have only ever really eaten salt and vinegar crisps for...
I know,
years,
it's true.
Which is an interesting
Piece
of information.
Nothing else comes up to it. Those Co-op salt and vinegar balsamic crisps, big bag, eat it all, stomach ache for 2 hours.
Mama, why would you want to do that?
It's just the taste.
But why
the flavor
would you want to have
incredible.
A tummy ache?
Oh, it makes me feel so good. Jeez.
Oh, weird.
Cut flowers.
I'm just going to move away from you now. Yeah.
Do you like getting a bunch of cut flowers, Ellen?
I don't think there's anything more beautiful and special than being given a bunch of cut flowers.
What, even if they're bought in a garage forecourt?
No. I said, no, definitely not.
Ah, you didn't specify.
Nobody does that. Who buys those flowers?
I don't know. They always seem to be sold out. Or blown
horrendous.
Away.
And, you know, there's lots of flowers that you can buy in supermarkets and stuff, and they are really lovely. They're not necessarily fragrant, they don't last so long, perhaps, but they are really beautiful. Yeah, but not garage forecourt flowers.
You're saying they're beautiful just in case you get some work from Tesco in the future. I do love them, really.
I bought supermarket flowers. I do love them.
Yeah? Uh-huh.
But you can't beat having freshly cut flowers from the garden.
No, I think you're right, darling. I think you're really right. And we did a photo shoot as well, didn't we?
We done a photo
that
shoot.
That were racy, wasn't it?
That were, weren't that was fun.
We did it all in pastel.
And you dressed my hair in umbrella fizz, and I dressed your beard in umbrella fizz.
I've just seen on Facebook, and let me show you. They got this new thing where everyone's dressing their beards up.
Yeah.
With flowers.
That's not new, though.
I can't get the right app open. Look, Giorgio, the guy in Australia. Oh, Australian voices there. You don't want that. Look, they've got. But this is like mega.
Flower beard.
Look, how long they are.
Whoa.
I'm wondering if I might do that, actually. Yeah. That's pretty
That's
cool.
That's big.
Because I was amazed at how they hung in there today. Oh, look, someone's commenting they're called Kylie.
That's really funny. When I was putting the stems into your beard,
Yeah. It
was like your beard gripped onto them like the tendrils from a vine. We had good fun, but it was really lovely being out amongst all the cut flowers.
Yeah, but rained a lot, didn't it?
Can you stop swearing,
sorry,
please?
Sorry. But in the gossip bit, I'm allowed to be myself, right? Because it's right at the end, it's like the uncut version of the...
We will have to bleep
really?
Out your F.
Why?
Yeah. Because Apple will pick up on that, and they don't allow that.
Oh, right.
So, yeah.
Oh, now I feel foolish.
Do you?
I'm going to have to rescue myself with an inane joke.
Just say it over and over and over again. So then our editor has to go beep, 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 beep.
Yeah, exactly. I'm too busy watching these bearded dragons now with the flowers all in their bits.
It's quite in their bits. Your beard.
In their beards,
not their bits.
Mm-hmm.
I love making flower crown as well. You know, Garden Day this year.
Yeah.
Garden Day had those amazing flower crowns. So
you couldn't you couldn't wear that on the tube.
No. But you can make your own with your own cut flowers. It's all good.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Now I know they're easy to stick in your hair. That's pretty good. Oh, my gosh. But now, I love any sort of cut flowers, really. But when I was a kid, I didn't realise... Like, you could cut anything as a cut flower. I tended to think, it's only chrysanthemums or dahlias.
Yeah, anything.
But now there's no rules. You know,
and I love that, actually, about that podcast. There's no rule. Grow what you want, cut what you want. What does it matter?
Precisely. Ellen, is that your magazine? Is that the one you now star in?
What, Grow Your Own? Man?
Yeah, come on. People need to know about this. Let's grab a copy.
Where is it?
No, that's the ASOS catalogue, not that one.
It's there.
Well, that one.
Run
us through it then.
Grow Your Own magazine.
Have you got a little mugshot in there?
I've got a mugshot on page 75. This is in, I think, is this August one?
She's famous.
So I've got a page for the next few months at least.
Where'd you get that picture from?
Nice. Cool, isn't it? About gardening for well-being, but it's not it's not necessarily to do with how gardening is so good for you, but the kind of plants that you can grow, why they're really brilliant for you to grow with vegetables or fruits and vegetables, and then what different stuff that you can do with them. So this month was about chamomile, and it was all about how to grow it and how useful it is in the garden.
Cool.
But also, I kind of came up with this idea of, because you have chamomile tea, don't you? And that's really good and soothing and calming and relaxing, especially at the end of the day. So we were having really hot weather at the time, you know, that mega heat wave that we had. So using the chamomile flowers to make ice lollies.
Oh, cool. Obviously, and the recipe's here.
Yeah, you could just put them in ice cubes, but the ice lollies is pretty cool. And then you and the kids, anyone can just have them. It's to nice, cool, soothing and cooling ice lollies.
Well, Ellen Mary says to make your ice lolly, step one, use a handful of chamomile flowers and let them steep in boiling water for 10 minutes. Then strain. Stop here if you like, because this is chamomile. What? Stop, what do you mean?
Right, strain. If you don't want to carry on with the recipe...
Oh, I see,
just
right.
Just steep it, strain it, and you've got tea.
So you're like, hold up.
Yeah, so you can have tea if you want, but if not, carry on. And
yeah,
make
but I'm going straight ahead. I'm on step two now. Mix a good squeeze of fresh lemon and some sliced or chopped ginger. Step three, add the lemon and ginger to the chamomile tea and allow it to cool off. Step four, strain again and add a tablespoon of honey. I prefer it without, because I'm pure, to sweeten. And then step up. Don't really grimace at me.
When did I grimace?
You did just then.
I just put my phone down.
Mm. Step five, pour the mixture into ice lolly molds and freeze. Step six, enjoy. That's so cute, darling. But this is a series. So you've hit the big time now.
It's the big time.
This is national.
Yeah, cool, right?
Did you realise? Yeah.
I have written for quite a few national magazines, you know.
Have you?
Just so you know.
I didn't know that. Like what? Like what? Thanks.
Like all over the world. Kitchen Gardener.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh.
I've done some travel magazines in America and Australia.
Oh, right. Okay.
Just, you know.
Now I'm embarrassed. I had no idea you were a big deal.
This is what I have to put up with. This is just what I have to deal with.
You Jezebel. Is Jezebel a rude word or not?
I don't know. iTunes might cancel our podcast if you use that.
I'm not sure.
Anyway.
Ding dong.
Ding dong.
Today's podcast partner is VeggiePod, the integrated all-in-one garden bed suitable for anyone interested in growing your own. You'll be amazed at how quickly your vegetables grow in a VeggiePod. And as a special offer for our listeners, VeggiePod are offering PPP subscribers 10% off any sized VeggiePod when purchased with a stand or a trolley. Simply go to veggiepod.co.uk and enter PPP10 on checkout.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Plant-Based Podcast.
Have a browse of the rest of the library or hop on over to the website, which is theplantbasedpodcast.net.
You'll also find our social media links. Please connect with us and let us know about any plant-based projects that you think we should be covering on the show.
And make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you'll be the first to hear the next episode. We're releasing once a fortnight. So until next time, enjoy the world of plants.